A reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 4th canto, 5th chapter, verses 1 to 26, 4th canto, 6th chapter, verses 1 to 7. Mache vacha bhava bhavanya nitanam prajapate asat pitaya avagam yanavadat svapashara sainyam chatapathar rabhubhi pita vitam karam paramadate. Maitreya said, when Lord Shiva heard from Narada that Sati, his wife, was now dead because of Prajapati Daksha's insult to her and that his soldiers had been driven away by the Ribhu demigods, he became greatly angry. As Sati has tried to mitigate the misunderstanding between her father and her husband, Lord Shiva, glorifying the transcendental position of Lord Shiva, she has put forward many arguments to show that Daksha acted improperly in cursing her husband. What were some of her arguments that she told Daksha? How did she try to mitigate the misunderstanding? Yes. Different standards for different people in pravritti and nivritti. So Lord Shiva is above pravritti and nivritti. And he's above, he's a paramahansa. He's not part of the vanashram system. Another argument, yeah. Right, vairagya. The opulence of Lord Shiva is vairagya, prema. And it's much superior to the opulence of Daksha. Although his opulence, Prabhupada said, is avyakta, may not be manifested. It is avyakta, it is not manifested. Any other arguments? What's that? Oh, yes, Lord Brahma worships. He takes the Mahaprasad from Lord Shiva and the dust of his feet and his head. So now Daksha is being, actually not being appreciated by Maitreya Muni, his behavior. That he called him some words, Brahma Juk, very hard-hearted. He's not a Brahmin. So because for three reasons he did not, he made an offense to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he did not stop Sati from committing suicide, and also one more was he offended his daughter, I believe, Sati. So these are the reasons why Daksha's ill fame still continues to this day. So Sati, on the other hand, she committed suicide because she wanted to put an end to her relationship with Daksha. She couldn't tolerate anymore that she had some relationship with him who was an aparati. So in this chapter we'll find out how Lord Shiva reacts to her untimely death and also what happens to those who blaspheme Vaishnavas. So we should be very careful. So now verses, Lord Shiva heard from Narada, his wife is now dead, he became greatly angry. Purport, Prabhupada says, Lord Shiva understood that Sati, being the youngest daughter of Daksha, could present the case of Lord Shiva's purity of purpose and would thus be able to mitigate the misunderstanding between Daksha and himself. But such a compromise was not attained, and Sati was deliberately insulted by her father by not being received properly when she visited his house without being invited. Sati herself could have killed her father Daksha, because she is personified material energy and has immense power to kill and create within this material universe. In the Brahma Samhita, her strength is described. She is capable of creating and dissolving many universes. But although she is so powerful, she acts under the direction of the Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna as his shadow. Chaye vayasya bhuvanani vipartidurga ichara rupamati asa visheshtate sa govindamari purusham tamaham jani. Would not have been difficult for Sati to punish her father, but she thought that since she was his daughter, it was not proper for her to kill him. So instead she killed herself, because she couldn't kill him. And that was a part of him, her, that belonged to him, the body. So it was like killing him in a sense. Later on, in the 24th chapter of this canto, there's a purport that describes Durga, goddess Kali. In Sanskrit, Shaktya Ghoraya, horrible energy, horrible Shakti. But this Shakti is always under Lord Shiva's control. So Prabhupada says there's a picture of Kali where she wears a garland composed of the heads of all the demons that she has killed. And in her left hand she holds a chopper. So this is for killing asuras. And all the great wars we see, they are conducted by her, goddess Kali. So the asuras, they try to pacify her, but when they become too intolerable, then she just goes and kills all of them indiscriminately. So sometimes, Prabhupada also says, there's another picture of Lord Shiva, and he's down on the ground in front of Kali, and she's stepping on his chest. Because sometimes Prabhupada said he has to fall down flat to beg her to stop killing the asuras. So this is the position of Sati, or Durga. She has so much power, but here she's not using her power. So we're in fourth canto, fifth chapter, verse 2. Thus Lord Shiva, being extremely angry, pressed his lips with his teeth and immediately snatched from his head a strand of hair which blazed like electricity or fire. He stood up at once, laughing like a madman, and dashed the hair to the ground. A fearful black demon, as high as the sky and as bright as three suns combined, was thereby created. His teeth very fearful, and the hairs on his head like burning fire. He had thousands of arms equipped with various weapons, and he was garlanded with the heads of men. When that gigantic demon asked with folded hands, "What shall I do, my lord?" Lord Shiva, who is known as Bhutanath, directly ordered, "Because you are born from my body, you are the chief of all my associates. Therefore, kill Daksha and his soldiers at the sacrifice." Oh, in purport, Prabhupada says, here is the beginning of competition between Brahma Tejas and Shiva Tejas. So what was the Brahma Tejas? Something after that Prabhupada says. The curse is there. Actually, that came after the Shiva. First there was a curse by Nandishra, then Bhrigu's curse, and then something else when Sati killed herself. The Ribhu demigods were created by Bhrigu in the fire. So that's what Srila Prabhupada mentions here. Bhrigu Muni had created the Ribhu demigods who had driven away the soldiers of Lord Shiva. And when Lord Shiva heard his soldiers had been driven away, he created the tall black demon Virabhadra to retaliate. So there's sometimes competition between the mode of goodness and mode of ignorance. That is the way of material existence. Even when one is situated in the mode of goodness, there's every possibility that his position will be mixed with or attacked by the mode of passion or ignorance. So sometimes we're feeling like, oh, today I chanted my rounds really nicely and I'm on top of everything. And then all of a sudden something happens and you get angry. Your son does something or something, and then you fall from your mode of goodness. It gets mixed. You get attacked by another mode. Or even ignorance. You think, yes, it's a good day. I have time. I can sleep. I can take a little nap because I accomplish so much. So anyway, there's always a competition. So this struggle for existence is there right from the beginning of creation. So what are some other examples of the competition between, first of all, Brahma Tejas and Shiva Tejas? Are there any examples? Yes. Okay. I forgot also. The yawning weapon. Oh, the Narayanastra and Shiva Jwara. Yeah. The Narayanastra was a yawning? I think it was freezing. There's the yawning weapon. Okay, well, the Narayanastra was very cold and the Shiva Jwara was very hot. So the cold defeated the hot. Okay. He surrendered to Krishna in the end. Which was good for him. Sankirtan Das. Ignorance defeating. Yes, now ignorance is defeating goodness. Virabhadra is ignorance. And we'll see later on how he's described. I think, let's see. Was he described? No, not yet. He'll be described, his personality will be described, and we'll see actually what mode he's in. Any other examples? Now we're not talking about Brahma Tejas, but just in our modern society, what are some examples of the competition of the modes? Yeah. Hippies? Mode of ignorance? Later on they become businessmen. So from ignorance to passion, I guess you would say. Right. Okay, if they're frustrated in the mode of passion, they may move down to the mode of ignorance. Any other examples? Yeah. Okay, people work hard all week in passion, and the weekend they go into ignorance, intoxication, and sleeping. And they think the more you sleep, then they have a competition. Oh, I got up at 12 o'clock. I got up at 1 o'clock. Yeah. Dhammaglanir. Not always. He said sometimes. Yeah, material world is going down. Right. Okay, so Sankirtan is seeing that ignorance is more often defeating goodness and passion than the other way around, because that's the nature of the material world. Okay, interesting comment. Could be. In Satya Yuga it may not be like that, but certainly in Kali Yuga we see, yeah. Willful attempt. Okay, so you're saying going down the stream along with the current, that is ignorance. And if you're fighting against it, then that's goodness. Trying to be in goodness. Okay, so he's saying that goodness prevails because maintenance is longer than creation and destruction. Maintenance. Well, if you stay up late enough, it comes to... My son was doing that. Stay up till 5 in the morning, you're up at 5. Okay, any more? Okay, I have a few examples here. The communism and capitalism, Prabhupada said, is an example. That the communism is the Shudras and capitalism is the Vaishyas, the competition between ignorance and passion. And I was teaching my son this American civics book. And in this book it said that there has been a big shift in population in America from the country to the city. So now most of the people live in the city in America. So what does this tell us? A shift from goodness to passion. Because the country is in goodness. Even in the beginning of that chapter it said that, the book said that God made the country and man made the city. They had that comment there. So it's quite interesting that we see this shift, this natural shift in the age of Kali, even within our history that we know. Yes. Industrial revolution. Yes. Yes. Okay, 12th canto, there will be another shift to the country because they will be forced to leave their homes. So we see these things are going on. So now we'll go to... Actually, I see in front of my house, I go and I feed these peacocks. They're very beautiful. And then sometimes the dogs come and chase them away, and then they start fighting over the food. So then I see a different mode. And then I see the monkeys come. And the monkeys come, and they'll eat, and then they'll start destroying whatever I have. Like, they'll start ripping my clothes or breaking my plants. So it's three different modes there in action. You see, right in front of my house. Yesterday, yeah, I made the mistake of throwing some bananas out there, and then they ripped up all my clothes in for their thanks. Yeah, they were rotten. Anyway, yeah, that was a mistake. Okay, so we see the modes in action in everyday life. Verse 5. Maitreya continued, "My dear Vidura, that black person was the personified anger of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and he was prepared to execute the orders of Lord Shiva. Thus, considering himself capable of coping with any power offered against him, he circumambulated Lord Shiva. So anger personified. That's the mode he's in. So that tells us ignorance or ignorance. And sometimes it's said it's passion and ignorance mixed. Sometimes it's said it's ignorance. So we won't discuss what it is, but anyway, it's a lower mode. Verse 6. Many other soldiers of Lord Shiva followed the fierce personality in a tumultuous uproar. He carried a great trident, fearful enough to kill even death. And on his legs he wore bangles which seemed to roar. At that time, all the persons assembled in sacrificial arena, the priests, the chief of the sacrificial performance, and the Brahmins and their wives wondered where the darkness was coming from. Later, they could understand that it was a dust storm, and all of them were full of anxiety. Yeah, we had some dust storms here since we've been here, and you look at the sky, and the sky starts getting a brown, dark brownish color, and you know it's something's coming. Verse 8, conjecturing on the origin of the storm, they said, "There is no wind blowing, and no cows are passing. Nor is it possible that this dust storm could be raised by plunderers, for there is still the strong King Barhi, who would punish them. Where is this dust storm blowing from? Is the dissolution of the planet now to occur?" So Prabhupada said that this dust storm resembled the dissolution of the cosmic manifestation. Verse 9, Prasuti, the wife of Daksha, along with the other women assembled, became very anxious and said, "This danger has been created by Daksha because of the death of Sati, who, even though completely innocent, quit her body as her sisters looked on." So she's very sensitive. She knows actually that something's going to happen to Daksha. Prabhupada says about in the purport, four lines down, Sati's mother could understand how much Sati had been pained by the insult of her father. Sati had been present along with the other daughters, and Daksha had purposely received all of them but her because she happened to be the wife of Lord Shiva. This consideration convinced the wife of Daksha of the danger which was now ahead, and thus she knew that Daksha must be prepared to die for his heinous act. Verse 10. At the time of dissolution, Lord Shiva's hair is scattered, and he pierces the rulers of the different directions with his trident. He laughs and dances proudly, scattering their hands like flags, as thunder scatters the clouds all over the world. So you know, they used to play the beat in Goa. If you ever heard that, that's the beat for his dance of destruction. That's it. I heard the beat all the time because they were worshiping Lord Shiva. Yes, all beats are actually. Yeah, well, yes, you're right. Anyway, that's the beat that was going on. And there's some big beats also, but that was the main one. It's not like our beat. It's quite different. Kartals. So, actually, we've all gone through this dissolution many, many times, but we've forgotten all about it. So in the purport of verse 10, Śrīla Prabhupāda says, Prasuti, who appreciated the power and strength of her son-in-law, Lord Shiva, is describing what he does at the time of dissolution. This description indicates that the strength of Lord Shiva is so great that Daksha's power could not be set in comparison to it. At the time of dissolution, Lord Shiva, with his trident in hand, dances over the rulers of the different planets, and his hair is scattered, just as the clouds are scattered all over directions in order to plunge the different planets into incessant torrents of rain. In the last phase of dissolution, all the planets become inundated with water, and that inundation is caused by the dancing of Lord Shiva. This dance is called the Pralaya dance, or dance of dissolution. Prasuti could understand the dangers ahead resulted not only from Daksha's having neglected her daughter, but also because of his neglecting the prestige and honor of Lord Shiva. So the women are psychic here. They know, or maybe they're not psychic, they just know what happens. What's that? Like who? Mandodari, the wife of Ravana, yes. Yes, she understood what Ravana was going to get because he insulted a chaste lady. So the women, they understood what's going to happen. They immediately. Verse 11. The gigantic black man bared his fearful teeth. By the movements of his brows, he scattered the luminaries all over the sky. And he covered them with his strong, piercing effulgence. So he was very tall, in other words. He was scattering the stars. He was scattering the planets with his eyebrows. So you can imagine how tall he was. Because of the misbehavior of Daksha, even Lord Brahma, Daksha's father, could not have been saved from the great exhibition of anger. While all the people talked amongst themselves, Daksha saw dangerous omens from all sides, from the earth and from the sky. So what are some dangerous omens that we see, or hopefully we don't see? Yes? Eclipse. Eclipse is a bad omen. Earthquakes. Yes, earthquakes mean, Prabhupada says, some demon has been born. If there's an earthquake, big demon has taken birth on the earth. So that Gujarat earthquake, some big demon was born. Yes, what are some other omens? Floods. Floods. Of course, that may be a good omen sometimes. Tidal waves. Tidal waves, yeah. The flood of love of Godhead. They say when Mayapur is flooded, then that means there is prema going all over the world. And according to Chaitanya Charitamrita. Rain is actually good.
No, on daytime.
Rainbow?
At night. This is good sign. When rain comes in daytime, and with Radhika,
rainbow?
Yes.
I thought rainbow is auspicious.
But it is the daytime.
Anyway, if there's no rain, rain anytime is good. Yeah. Darkness in the day. Yeah, we've experienced that in Vrindavan. Sometimes a hailstorm will come, and 4 o'clock in the afternoon, complete black. Like nighttime. Yes, so in the first canto, 14th chapter, there's a list of dangerous omens, disruptions in the seasonal regularities. Monsoon, huh? You were going to say that? Yes, so monsoon doesn't come, monsoon comes late. These are bad omens. People in general become very greedy, angry, and deceitful. Of course, that's all over the place now, so let's consider it an omen. And here, the she-jackal cries at the rising sun and vomits fire, and the dog barks at me fearlessly. And that happens a lot, the dog barks at me fearlessly. So you just see how inauspicious Kali Yuga is, because a lot of these omens, bad omens, they're everyday experiences for people. The smoke encircles the sky, cloudless thunder. Thunder without clouds, and lightning without clouds. So these are inauspicious things. So now in this purport, the commentators comment on the word Mahatma as used in reference to Daksha of all people. How can Daksha be called a Mahatma after what he's done? Yes. Sarcastically, okay, Prabhupada said? They're calling him a Mahatma sarcastically, because Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says that actually he's a Duratma, not a Mahatma. What else do the commentators say about the use of the word Mahatma? Right, okay, he was so hard-hearted or strong-hearted that he didn't care his daughter died. That's another meaning of Mahatma. Okay, so Prabhupada says at the end, the word Mahatma to describe the qualifications of Daksha is used sarcastically. So who is speaking? This is Maitreya. Maitreya is being sarcastic here. Prabhupada's telling us. He's using the word Mahatma. Dakshasya, let's see the Sanskrit. Dakshasya Muhur Mahatmana. Sarcastically. So verse 13. My dear Vidura, all the followers of Lord Shiva surrounded the arena of sacrifice. They were of short stature and were equipped with various kinds of weapons. Their bodies appeared to be like those of sharks, blackish and yellowish. They ran all around the sacrificial arena and thus began to create disturbances. Some of the soldiers pulled down the pillars which were supporting the pandal of sacrifice. Some of them entered the female quarters. Some began destroying the sacrificial arena, and some entered the kitchen and the residential quarters. So you can picture the scene now. They're all attacking, and they're short and they're yellowish and blackish. People, short people, attacking the sacrifice. Why didn't Bhrigu do something this time? I guess they were too powerful. They broke all the pots made for use in the sacrifice, and some of them began to extinguish the sacrificial fire. Some tore down the boundary line of the sacrificial arena, and some passed urine on the arena. Some blocked the way of the fleeing sages. Some threatened the women assembled there, and some arrested the demigods who were fleeing the pandal. Maniman, one of the followers of Lord Shiva, arrested Bhrigu Muni, and Virabhadra, the black demon, arrested Prajapati Daksha. Another follower who is named Chandesha arrested Pusha. Nandishwar arrested the demigod Bhaga. There was a continuous shower of stones, and all the priests and other members assembled at the sacrifice were put into immense misery. For fear of their lives, they dispersed in different directions. Virabhadra tore off the mustache of Bhrigu, who was offering the sacrificial oblations with his hands in the fire. Do you know what's the significance of having a mustache? Is there anything, any need for it? Yeah. During Daksha Yagya, he was smiling, moving his mustache. Okay, so he was, so when Daksha was doing the sacrifice, then Bhrigu was doing something with his mustache. Smiling. Smiling. And Shiva was offended. In the previous one. Right. Okay. So anyway, that'll teach him for doing something with his mustache. Virabhadra immediately caught Bhaga, who had been moving his eyebrows during Bhrigu's cursing of Lord Shiva, and out of great anger thrust him to the ground and forcibly put out his eyes. So he was moving his eyebrows. Imagine, lose your eyes because of that. Yeah. Acha. So Bhaga later appears as Dhritarashtra, who is also blind. In the future, he will also be blind. So that's something interesting to know. Just as Baladev knocked out the teeth of Dantavakra, the king of Kalinga, during the gambling match at the marriage ceremony of Aniruddha, Virabhadra knocked out the teeth of both Daksha, who had shown them while cursing Lord Shiva, and Pusha, who by smiling sympathetically had also shown his teeth. So just imagine, they never did they know what was going to happen when they were raising their eyebrows and showing their mustache and their teeth. And just exactly the thing that they were doing against Shiva is the thing that they would lose. So Prabhupada, in the purport, explains the reference to the marriage of Aniruddha and how the Kshatriyas, they often fight during marriage ceremonies, that this is the Kshatriya spirit, challenging spirit. They're just ready for a fight. They're just looking for a fight. So this is what happened. There's commonly killing and misfortune in marriage ceremonies. And after such fighting, the parties would come to a compromise and everything would be settled. This Daksha Yagya was similar to such events. Now, all of them, Daksha and the demigods Bhaga, Pusha, and Bhrigu, were punished by the soldiers of Lord Shiva, but later everything would come to a peaceful end. So, the spirit of fighting between one another was not exactly inimical, because everyone was so powerful and wanted to show his strength by Vedic mantra or mystic power. All these fighting skills were very elaborately exhibited by the different parties of the Daksha Yajna. So actually, they're not killing each other. They're just showing their prowess, Brahma Tejas and Shiva Tejas. It's not really fighting. It's just like a sport here, as Prabhupada was saying. Of course, to us, it looks like they're fighting. So the reference to Balaram and who was it? King of Kalinga? Baladev knocked out the teeth of Dantavakra. So the story goes that actually the whole thing was started by this Dantavakra, the king of Kalinga. He told Rukmi, you should defeat Balaram at dice. He's not very expert, but he's quite addicted to it. So I think you should do it. So Rukmi challenged Balaram, and the first bet was 100 coins, 1,000, and 10,000. And Rukmi was winning all these rounds. But then they bet 100,000 gold coins. And this time, Balaram won. But Rukmi said, no, I won. So he was cheating. And then just then a voice from the sky declared, Balaram has fairly won this wager. Rukmi is lying. So Rukmi then said, you cowherds, what do you know about playing dice? You just go in the forest all day long, tending the cows. You don't know about Kshatriya things. So then Balaram got very angry, and he raised his club, and he killed him right on the spot. And he took out the teeth of the king of Kalinga, who showed them. It's the same thing Prabhupada is making reference to that Bhaga and Daksha lost their teeth in this fight. So verse 22. Then Virabhadra, the giant-like personality, sat on the chest of Daksha and tried to separate his head from his body with sharp weapons, but was unsuccessful. He tried to cut the head of Daksha with hymns as well as weapons, but still it was hard to cut even the surface of the skin of Daksha's head. Thus, Virabhadra was exceedingly bewildered. So interesting that he used hymns, because this is the Vedic practice of fighting. You would fight using mantras to fight. So he tried his mantras, but nothing was working. Why is that? How come he couldn't cut off his head with mantras? Because he was hard-hearted?
No, because he was son of Brahma.
Because he was son of Brahma? Anyway, finally he figured out what to do. Verse 24. Then Virabhadra saw the wooden device in the sacrificial arena by which the animals were to have been killed. He took the opportunity of this facility to behead Daksha. Upon seeing the action of Virabhadra, the party of Lord Shiva was pleased and cried out joyfully, and all the bhutas, ghosts, and demons that had come made a tumultuous sound. On the other hand, the brahmanas in charge of the sacrifice cried out in grief at the death of Daksha. Virabhadra then took the head and with great anger threw it into the southern side of the sacrificial fire, offering it as an oblation. In this way, the followers of Lord Shiva devastated all the arrangements for sacrifice. After setting fire to the whole arena, they departed for their master's abode, Kailash. So just imagine Daksha. He never thought his head was going to be the oblation in the fire. But here it happened, that we are going to offer the head of Daksha into the fire. Quite amazing change. It's chapter 6. So in the first 7 verses, we will hear the aftermath of this destruction. 1 and 2. All the priests and other members of the sacrificial assembly and all the demigods, having been defeated by the soldiers of Lord Shiva and injured by weapons like tridents and swords, approached Lord Brahma with great fear. After offering him obeisances, they began to speak in detail of all the events which had taken place. So we shouldn't think that even if you're a demigod or sage, you have a nice life up in the heavenly planets, or you're trying to do some sacrifice or something. It's difficult everywhere in this material world. Just imagine the heavenly planets. Try to do some sacrifice and you're beheaded. Both Lord Brahma and Vishnu had already known that such events would occur in the sacrificial arena of Daksha. And knowing beforehand, they did not go to the sacrifice. When Lord Brahma heard everything from the demigods and the members who had attended the sacrifice, he replied, "You cannot be happy in executing a sacrifice if you blaspheme a great personality and thereby offend his lotus feet. You cannot have happiness in that way." So what are the results? We have discussed this, I think, before. What are the results of Vaishnava Aparad? If you make offense to a devotee, what is the result? Yes.
Heart becomes hard.
What else? Yes. Fall down from your spiritual position. Yes. Your head is cut off or your teeth are knocked out. Eyes put out. Mustache ripped off. That's good if you don't have one. Yeah. Progress in spiritual life is stopped. You lose your taste. Lose your taste. Yes. Spiritually and physically, you lose your duration of life, lose your luster, you lose your opulences, you lose your health. So many things. Yes. Get leprosy. We heard about that. Yes. And Chaitanya Leela, everybody, whoever offends a devotee gets leprosy. So this is another reaction from performing Vaishnava Aparad. So Prabhupada in the purport, he says, Lord Rama explained to the demigods that although Daksha wanted to enjoy the results of fruitive sacrificial activities, it is not possible to enjoy when one offends a great personality like Lord Shiva. It was good for Daksha to have died in the fight, because if he had lived, he would have committed such offenses at the lotus feet of great personalities again and again. And what is the proof? He offended his daughter. Okay? He offended Lord Shiva, then he offended his daughter.
Brahma.
And Brahma, yes.
And Brahma, because he said, oh, he's...
Right. So after offending Lord Shiva, he went on to offend his daughter and Lord Brahma. And his ill fame still continues. And in his next birth, again, he will offend Narada Muni. Great soul. So it continues. Verse 5. You have excluded Lord Shiva from taking part in the sacrificial results, and therefore you are all offenders at his lotus feet. So not only Daksha was an offender, everybody present there became implicated in the offense. The sages, the priests, the Brahmins, they all became implicated in Daksha's offense. Still, if you go without mental reservations and surrender unto him and fall down at his lotus feet, he will be very pleased. So what's the name for Lord Shiva?
Ashutosh.
Ashutosh. Very satisfied. Because he is Ashutosh. Lord Brahma knew the mind of Lord Shiva very well. And he was confident that the demigods, who were offenders at his lotus feet, could mitigate their offenses by going to him and surrendering without reservation. So if we should offend a devotee in the course of our devotional service, then what should be our behavior? Because sometimes it happens. Yes. Go and beg forgiveness. What else? Rendering service to that devotee. Menial service. Yes.
Rectify
your mentality. Okay, so there's the gross. There's things you can do with your body. And there's also things... Most important thing also is something... You have to have a change of mind. A change of... How can we do that? How can we change? Find good qualities in that person. Yes, find good qualities. Now, what happens if somebody offends you? What should you do? This is punished to me for my previous actions.
And be very humble.
Be humble.
Accept it very humbly.
Okay. Yes, Sankirtan. Okay, so you may, here's a step up. You, if someone offends you, then you feel sorry that I have caused this person to offend me. Yes.
It must be something in my behavior
that have caused this offense. Okay? Yeah.
Take it as a lesson.
Take it as a lesson. Okay, take it as something that helps you to better realize your position. And somebody else even went one step forward. Somebody told me also, whoever has offended you, you should beg them for forgiveness. Beg forgiveness from somebody who has offended. Not you have to go to them, but at least mentally. Because that'll be pretty confusing if you go to them and say, please forgive me. But mentally, yes.
The understanding is that when someone offends us, it's pain.
We feel pain.
Pain is a reaction for some sinful activity.
Okay, so pain is a reaction. When someone offends us, we feel pain. So pain is a reaction for some sinful activity. Yes, so we should beg for forgiveness from that person who is offending us, because actually in our last life we must have done something. Somebody already said that in our last life we must have done something to offend that person. So therefore, a step up, one is to beg forgiveness for your offense, and the next step is to beg forgiveness from the people who offend you. It could have been, you know, could have been any of the lives. May not have been last life.
Could have been this life.
Hundred lives ago. Could have been million lives ago.
Life.
Or this life, yeah. Yeah, this life, I'm sure we can count so many cases where we offended or were offended. At least where we were offended, yes. So the pain brings our attention to what we are attached to. When somebody offends us for some reason, and we feel pain, then the reason why they're offending us brings our attention to what we are attached to. If you can follow that. We're attached to our prestige, our position, and we think, oh, that person, you know, he's much lower than me, you know, or whatever, whatever. Why he should or she should offend me. Yeah, so these, and actually if we do practice this forgiveness, this is actually the quality of a Brahmin. If we practice this, then very quickly we can get past anartha nivritti, because this is part of anartha nivritti, is the offensive mentality. Mm-hmm. Right, that too. Yes. Right. So this is another good point here, that instead of reacting, oh no, he offended me, or oh no, I offended him, you know, anyway, it just happens every day, you know. It's not a big thing. It's not an important thing, unless you offend that person. Then you can't say, well, it's not important. But if someone offends you, you can say that. But if you offend someone and you say, well, anyway, it doesn't matter. And that's, yeah. Grimm's Fairy Tales, okay.
A gnat.
A very small, small insect. Back of a bull, okay. I'm sorry for crawling on your back, he whispers to the bull. The bull says, anyway, didn't even notice he was there. Yes. So the devotee, actually one thing though is that the devotee is like that. The devotee is thinking, anyway, it doesn't matter. But when Krishna sees somebody offend, then Krishna becomes angry. Just like, okay, so the question is, perhaps we do things and they're not actually offenses, although people get offended. Is that what you're saying? People may get offended at nothing. Or maybe they're not even offended. Uh-huh. Okay. So how do we know what's an offense? Is that more your question? Or how do we know if it's an actually offense or not? Whatever causes us to minimize the understanding of Krishna's position.
Offense is not to us, it's not to the person.
after we get through a phase, then it's like we're eating something which is not digestible.
Right. Okay.
So that could be part of like a self-blame offense. Say we face offenses in deity worship,
right.
All that causes us to lose sight of who we are in relation to Krishna.
Okay. When we make offense, it causes us to lose sight of our relationship with Krishna. Being offended from Manu Samhita.
A Brahmana should always fear homage as if it were a poison and constantly desire to suffer scorn as he would for nectar. For he who is scorned, nevertheless may sleep with an easy mind, awake with an easy mind,
So a Brahmin should fear homage and desire scorn. As if nectar. Scorn is nectar. This is Manu Samhita, very hard to follow in this age of Kali. And the scorner will perish. One who does it, he will perish. So don't think you're doing someone a favor by scorning them. Okay. Yes, it says here, it's very nice. It's like nectar, so I'll scorn you. Okay. Yes, Anand Vandana.
Usually you know if there's been an offense just because there's some maybe slight good feeling or some tension or some...
Right. Usually you know if you've done an offense because you can feel the tension or some awkwardness or something. And you don't know if you've offended them, then you should ask them, have I offended you? Have I done? Yes.
There was a story about Rupa Goswami.
Rupa Goswami. Yes.
Made a feast, and one person didn't come, so they found out perfectly he is the one that I offended.
Okay. Oh, yeah. He was trying to find out who he offended. So he offended someone while he was in trance. And then he made a feast and invited everyone, one person didn't come. So it must be that person. You offended Krishna.
Yes.
You offended Krishna.
So,
right. Yes, Bhagavata, you had something? We should forgive the minor offenses of others, Prabhupada says in Bhagavad Gita. Yeah. It's inevitable offenses will come. Madhavendra Puri and then... Okay. If any unfairness... We're quoting Bhakti Charu Maharaj. If any unfairness comes to us, it's a token of the unfairness that we committed towards Krishna when we left him. Yes. Okay. So there's an example. Someone said they were offended and then they wrote a note to say it. Okay, so we'll go on here. Verse 6. Lord Brahma is giving advice. Demigods have come to him and Lord Brahma is going to give advice. He's giving advice. Lord Brahma also advised them that Lord Shiva is so powerful that by his anger, all the planets and their chief controllers can be destroyed immediately. Also, he said that Lord Shiva was especially sorry because he had recently lost his dear wife and was also very much afflicted by the unkind words of Daksha. So he's explaining the power of Shiva. He's explaining also that Lord Shiva is upset for two reasons. He lost his wife and Daksha insulted him. Under the circumstances, Lord Brahma suggested, it would behoove them to go at once and beg his pardon. Verse 7. Lord Brahma said that no one, not even himself, Indra, all the members assembled in the sacrificial arena, or all the sages, could know how powerful Lord Shiva is. Under the circumstances, who would dare to commit an offense at his lotus feet? So here we're seeing the horrible results of offending a great personality. Wholesale destruction. So Padma Purana says, Satonindam Parama Aparadham. The greatest offense is to offend a devotee. So Brijan Prabhu, when he lectured on this section, he gave some nice examples from Chaitanya Bhagavat, that there was one devotee who came to Lord Chaitanya, and he said, he was a Brahmin actually, and he said, "I have offended a Vaishnava. I feel condemned. My mind is burning. How can I remove this sin?" So Lord Chaitanya said to him, "If one who takes poison then takes nectar, that will take effect." So what does that mean? If one takes poison then takes nectar? Chant holy name. Something even more specific. He has... Yes. He has offended the devotee with his words. Now he should glorify the devotee with his words. All the criticism is compared to poison. Now with the same mouth you have to drink nectar, glorify the Vaishnavas. Like that paper I gave you the other day, that is prayers to glorify. The ambrosia of this will do away with all other effects. This is a cure for unknowingly criticizing Vaishnavas. Nothing else will work. Practice glorifying the devotees. So this is what we all, this is our work. If we want to be free from aparad, we must glorify the devotees. This is the only thing Lord Chaitanya says, this is the only thing you can do, is glorify the devotees. There's another lila Burijan Prabhu recites from Chaitanya Bhagavat about a leper. A leper, he got leprosy from committing Vaishnav aparad, and this was towards, I believe, Shivas Thakur. Actually, there are so many examples of people offending Shivas Thakur, because he used to, in his house was the Sankirtan of Lord Chaitanya, and they used to close the doors of the house. So here is a leper, and he came to Lord Chaitanya. He says, "I'm burning from leprosy. Please give me relief." Lord Chaitanya was so angry, he said, "You go away. I don't want to see you. You have offended a Vaishnava. The Vaishnavas are so pure, they're glorified even by demigods. They're so dear to Krishna. Everything is finished if you offend a devotee." That's Shiva's Pandit. Then he said, "This leprosy is just a reminder of the offense. The actual punishment is yet to come." He said, "Leprosy is a reminder. I have offended a Vaishnava." So Lord Chaitanya said, leprosy is the first punishment. Yamaraj has 88 lakhs types of punishment waiting for the Vaishnava aparati. 88 lakhs, that's 880,000, or is it 8,800,000? I don't know. 88 lakhs. 8,800,000 types of punishments. And leprosy is the first. So just imagine what is in store. Just don't do it. Imagine what is in store. Unknowingly. So he gives you, Lord Chaitanya, if you unknowingly criticize a Vaishnava, you must just practice glorifying the Vaishnavas. That's all you can do. Don't even think of anything bad. Just glorify the Vaishnavas. And this is the antidote for offending a Vaishnava. So then Lord Chaitanya said, "Go to Shivas and throw yourself at his feet. That is the only way to be forgiven." So he ran to Shivas. Shivas forgave him and saved him. Now, here's something else. If after hearing this, so now we've all heard this, if one is still an offender, guess what's going to happen to you? Lord Chaitanya will personally give out the punishments. He will personally punish you, give out the punishment. If, after hearing this description, you still offend Vaishnavas, Lord Chaitanya will personally give out the punishments. This is from Chaitanya Bhagavan. Next, if one sees two Vaishnavas quarreling, one shouldn't think something is wrong. Now, I don't know if this applies to us. If you see two Vaishnavas fighting, quarreling, one shouldn't think something is wrong. Such quarreling is pleasing to the Lord and is transcendental. So then the example is arguments between Satyabhama and Rukmini. So I don't know if that's the same as us fighting with each other. But course, another example is Nityananda and Advaita always having their arguments like that. Also, like if we see Prabhupada's godbrothers fighting, then we should not criticize. It's a good question. Does this apply to ISKCON? Anyway, this is what Lord Chaitanya says. If one foolishly sides with one Vaishnava against another, then he is doomed due to offending a Vaishnava. Vaishnavas are the limbs of the Lord, so how can one serve the Lord with one hand and give pain with the other? This is from Chaitanya Bhagavat. Yes. 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 Yeah. Just better you chant Hare Krishna and stay on the spiritual side. It's a safe side. Just stay on the spiritual side, chant Hare Krishna. And don't take sides in anything. Okay, any other questions and comments on today's? Yes. Yes. End of the fifth chapter, last verse. 25.
They said the Brahmins, they cried out in grief.
In grief, yes. Yes, the Brahmins were attached. Well, they were in sides. There were sides here. There were two sides. And they were seeing that. The Brahmins, yes, we can see. And if we, when we read on in the next chapter, we'll see that, actually in the seventh chapter, the Brahmins will confess that, yes, we because we were cursed by Nandishwar, therefore we lost our intelligence and we're fallen. They admitted we have become fallen by engaging in this activity, this fruit of activities. We've become attached, we've become fallen. We've been having a discussion every day about what was their position, the Brahmins who were doing the sacrifice for Daksha. And yesterday, just yesterday, I was reading the beginning of chapter 7, where they start offering prayers. And they did say, yes, we are fallen, because we have been cursed. So the curse took effect. They became fallen. They became attached to fruitive activities. So therefore, here is another sign of their condition, that they were cheering. I mean, they were upset. There was like two sides, two teams. And one team was cheering. They won the battle. The other side lost, so they were lamenting. Yeah, there was not the right mood here. Yes.
They
may have anticipated that they would win. That they're going to be next. Okay, so they're thinking, well, we're going to be next. All right, what am I doing, Puri?
It's in 4, 5, 8.
4, 5, 8.
Yes,
okay, they're thinking, what is the cause of the dust storm? Cannot be plunders. I would think so, because in the Sanskrit, I think it is that, Prachinabharisha. Okay. Yeah, I also saw that Prachinabharhi, who is coming much later, in fourth canto. Okay, any other questions or discussion on today's points? Yes. Okay, you're saying you're not so sure about capital punishment. Because here it says it's good for a person to be killed. You seem to be extreme. So you think if someone kills somebody, I mean, you're just taking this example, or you're taking...
I mean, sort of generalizing that as a principle.
As principle in society. So you would be in favor of reform rather than killing the person. Reforming the murderers. But according to Manu, it's better to kill them. Because... Why? Next life, they will be killed. Yes. If he be, I mean, in the case of him becoming a devotee, your argument may be accepted.
Yeah.
If the murderer should become a devotee. But what else, you know, anything else, anything short of that, it would seem that he would still get the reaction to what he did. Yes. So there is a pattern. One who does it once usually does it again. So there was a devotee who had murdered somebody. He had been before he was a devotee. He had been a murderer.
So he confessed this to the
He confessed.
This authority. The authority said, I'm just trying to hire Krishna.
The authority said, just chant Hare Krishna.
He never got caught for it. He'd done it.
Yeah, he never...
And then quite soon after that, he drowned.
He drowned quite soon after that.
And he drowned.
So Krishna gave him the punishment quickly. Yeah, interesting. Interesting example. So this murderer drowned very quickly after becoming a devotee. So what should we conclude from that? That was his punishment. Okay, so he got a token punishment. He died young, that was a token punishment, otherwise he would have suffered in his next life. So that's what... Yeah, the king, so the point is that it's reducing his suffering if somebody kills him. Whereas, not only will he be killed, but he will have to go through so many hellish punishments in hell, tortured and tortured for so many years, and then in his next life he'll be killed. So instead of going through all that torture, you just kill him by the government. So he saves. Yeah, and then he gets elevated, actually, if he gets punished like that. But if he doesn't go through it, then he has to go through a lot of hellish... Well, the idea is that one day he'll understand, if I kill, I will be killed, and then he won't kill. And that's what the whole psychology behind being in this material world. There's two ways of getting reformed here. One is by getting constantly kicked and then realizing, no, it's a place of suffering. I shouldn't try to enjoy here. And the other way is to be a devotee of Krishna. Either we get kicked by Maya or else and get reformed and realize, no, I should not be here, I should not be doing these things, or else we do positive activity to please Krishna and then we get out. So that's an example. The punishment of Manu is an example of elevating or reforming people by understanding, okay, if there are consequences for my actions, and this is the consequence. If I kill, I will be killed. Yeah.
Like
the terrorists. Yeah.
Yeah,
killing cows, the same thing, yes. Deterrent. Deterrent. Acha. Okay. It's a deterrent. So we do remember in our subconscious, he'll remember, yes, I was killed in my last life because I killed. It's in the subconscious. Yeah. What's that? First canto? Question on first canto. Yeah, it would seem, you'd have to look it up in Brahma Vairata Purana. But in Srimad Bhagavatam, it says that he heard it from Vyasadeva. I don't know twice, but he says, I was instructed by my father. Yeah. I don't know, in Bhagavatam, at least once he was instructed. It's said in Bhagavatam, Shukadeva says, I was instructed by my father.
Yeah, this is more from the moon. But he was saying, on top of that, he was instructed again when he came back.
Yeah, so in the Bhagavatam, I don't think that's mentioned. You'd have to look up in Brahma Vaivarta Purana. This is the place. Yeah, I mean, it's quite likely that everybody was there. Okay, you had something? Studied. So that would imply it wasn't in the womb. He studied from his father. Because he was in the womb and he didn't want to come out. Yeah, by the mantras.
And they thrown his head to the source in the direction.
Yes. This is their offering.
A very unauspicious direction.
Anyway, this was their offering to the sacrificial fire. And they used the instrument to sacrifice. He was the sacrifice. He became the sacrificial animal, in other words. Daksha. Whatever is offered. Yeah. Well, that refers to Krishna consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
I hope. Yes. Okay. Any other questions or comments?